Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews, and we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader, but he's traveling through northern Michigan, and he has a segment recorded for us about traveling there, and it's Open Championship week, and who better to talk than him and me about the Open Championship, that art friend and European golf guru, Kieran Clark. So, Kieran, welcome to the show. How are you this week?
Well, thank you, Carlos. I'm feeling very well. I'm obviously really excited about the Open Championship this week at Royal Troon. You obviously, it's one of the great occasions in sport every year, every July. We come here, the game of golf descends upon the UK, in this case Scotland, down the west of Scotland for, you know, obviously golf's oldest and arguably most prestigious championship, and it's always a great occasion. So much to talk about that. We've obviously had a lot of interesting events in recent times, obviously with the US Women's Open ending in controversy, much like the men's edition, with the USGA getting involved in yet another rules situation. Obviously, we also had the Scottish Open on the European Tour last week at Castle Stewart, an event that was won by Alex Norah, an event that's kind of the dress rehearsal for the Open Championship, if you like. Always a great occasion there as well. So there's so much to discuss right in the meat of the golf season, and that's what you've been talking about, Rory McIlroy's comments about the Olympic Games today. So it's all happening, Carlos. It's Open Championship week. Everything's a bit frantic, but it's certainly exciting.
You just touched a nerve with me there about the Olympics, but I have something to say today. Sorry, I'm going to have to do it. I'm going to have to, but it has to be. That's going to be part later on the Part 5 News, but let's start, as usual, right away. Like you mentioned, there was a lot of action this weekend, starting with the U.S. Women's Open Championship, and oh, my God, no way. We need to first have to address the obvious elephant in the room here. I mean, first, for the second straight national championship of the USGA, a rules infraction captured by a high-powered telephoto lens of a television camera figured prominently in the proceedings. We have discussed more than in depth what happened at the U.S. Open, where the controversial and delayed one-stroke penalty on Dustin Johnson ultimately was inconsequential because of his margin of victory. But that wasn't the case here, where a delayed two-stroke penalty on Anna Nordqvist allowed Brittany Lang to win her first U.S. Women's Open, and it's just her second win in 287 LPGA tournaments. Nordqvist and Lang were in the middle of playing the final hole of a three-hole playoff when they were notified of Nordqvist's violation. She was given a two-stroke penalty for touching the sand with her club in a fairway bunker on the second playoff hole, and I must tell you, I saw that replay, and the grain of sand that she touched, I mean, a pinpoint is bigger than the grain of sand that she touched. And only a high-power telephoto camera like the one that was used there would just see it. And it's incredible to me that it was looking specifically at that part, at that moment. Okay? It's incredible. But, you know, after seeing that replay, a television broadcaster in Fox asked the USGA if there was a violation. USGA official John Voldinghammer went to the television truck to watch a replay which showed the violation that was not evident on the live broadcast or to the official watching the hole. Then comes the most controversial point here. The USGA then decides to rush and immediately try to inform the players, and they go to the fairway at the 18th where Nordqvist is about to hit her third shot. They allow her to do it. She does so without knowing that she was going to be assessed a two-stroke penalty. Then the officials notify of their decision and goes to Lang before she executes her third shot and tell her. Now with this new information, Lang puts the club she had selected back in the bag and picks up a shorter iron, lays up, easily two putts, and wins the tournament. What had been a great tournament up to that moment gets marred by this moronic decision of informing the players out of sequence, thus enabling the outcome to be decided on it. To be honest, no one can predict whether it could have changed the outcome. We have to be realistic. But Lang could have easily, in the wake of trying to hit it closer than Nordqvist, hit the shot of a lifetime and get it within his severity range, or she could have left it short or long, and that could have made a big difference in the outcome. But in the post-tournament interviews, you can see that Lang admits it changed her mind on what shot she would make, and Nordqvist elegantly in saying she doesn't dispute the penalty. She was just disappointed at the timing of it. I understand, you know, this is a no-win situation, but this thing about someone outside the tournament going to the USGA to say about a possible violation, and then the USGA coming in and acting about it to just save face, because that's what it is. But the timing of it, it really, to me, is worse than letting it pass and letting fans say then afterwards, you know, there should have been a violation, that should have been done. But here, it would have gone just like any other sport where things happen and fans go crazy about it, but that dies with the passing of these of the days. But these penalties here have been so controversial, and the backlash is such that it's really not worth it.
Yeah, it obviously was an extremely unfortunate situation, and really it was the last thing that the USGA would have possibly wanted or imagined after what happened at Oakmont at the men's US Open, obviously, how that ended up. Again, it comes back to this sort of recurring theme now that the game, the rules of golf, as complicated as they are, they generally speaking do work fairly well. But the reality is, with the, as you say, the increasing development of technology with the cameras that now involve in television, high definition cameras, then things that are so minuscule can now be picked up, which would not have been done even 10 years ago or 20 years ago, not too long before that. So. The rules of the game were not really made up to stand up to that sort of technology and that kind of level of scrutiny. And I have some sympathy to the USGA in that respect with this, but there has to be some sort of they have to address the issue of technology and how the rules are therefore interpreted through that. And as for the timing aspect, obviously, with the way the players were told out of sequence, that obviously was not ideal. I'm not sure how quickly the USGA officials could have got there if they could have done things a bit more swift than what they had done. And obviously, again, it was ultimately marred the end of a great championship. And I think for Brittany Lang, it's a shame for her as well. You know, winning that her first major, obviously her only second LPGA Tour event, a massive achievement for her, is somewhat, is tainted a little bit by this in respect to everyone's talking about it rather than her victory. And that's unfortunate for her. But the actual, again, for the USGA, it's a recurring theme. Obviously, it's the last thing they needed after what happened at Oakmont. And of course, it didn't help at all with the USGA president in the aftermath during the ceremony, getting Brittany's name wrong more than once, calling her Bethany, I think two or three times. And obviously, the president had a rather unfortunate performance as well at Oakmont after the men's US Open. So at the moment, the USGA is everything seems to be conspiring against them in terms of a public image standpoint. They are an amateur body. And they're looking more and more amateur with every passing time we look at them. I think this week, looking at the Open Championship, the RNA, having watched what's happened to the USGA in the past month or so, the RNA will be sitting fingers crossed thinking, please do not throw a situation like that at us this weekend at the Open. Because, the USGA have looked terrible, that their reputation's been damaged by these things. And, it is unfortunate everybody involved in it. I'm not sure if they could have told the players quickly and certainly in sequence, maybe they could have waited a bit longer. It's a really difficult situation. I think in the end, the USGA were kind of damned if they did and damned if they didn't. But as for the rules themselves, there has to be a philosophical question as to whether the technology that's involved in the game and broadcasting it, how that influences how the rules are interpreted, because obviously something that's so minuscule that could only be seen in slow motion with a high-definition camera that really isn't visible to the naked eye. Is that something that is equitable or should be considered? It's difficult to say. At the USGA, I think the issue was here at the US Open, a combination of ridiculously fast greens and a somewhat convoluted rule that led to that situation. And here, I think, again, it's technology that's caused this. So it's one of those things I feel for everybody involved. No one came out of this as a real winner. And that's a shame for the game, and particularly for the women playing that week. And obviously for Brittany Lang, the champion, a great achievement for her. But it's a US Open that will be remembered for that rules incident, which is unfortunate.
It's very unfortunate because she was really playing a great tournament. It was a great story, both battling back and forth and at Nordqvist. being six shots behind and being on top there in that playoff. I mean, also, on the other hand, you had a lot of players there with a chance. So Lydia Ko, Amy Yang, Yoon-ki-ji, Sung-hyun Park, who was there on top leading this tournament as well. They all had a chance to try to win it at the end. And there was also that unfortunate part that in the threesome, including Yoon-ki-ji and Sung-hyun Park and Lydia Ko, they were played like they were on the clock, running up to the tee, jogging in between shots, and they started to play. That was after the 10th hole to the 14th hole. Each of the player group was in two over. So Lydia Ko afterwards, you know, gracefully said that it was because of her double bogey and it was her fault and all that. But it was a great tournament anyway, down the from top to bottom. Anna Norte is a great achievement there, from coming from six behind to tie there and go into the playoffs. Amy Yang, MTG, and Sung-hyun Park, Lydia Ko, all four finished tie there for third. Stacey Lewis, another top 10 in a major or another tournament. She's top 10 machine. She finished solo seventh. Jarena Piller, Jody Ward, Chatoff, and Christy Kerr were there rounding up the top 10. And finally, also, I have to talk, you know, about Sayri Pack, who played her last competitive round in America on Friday. I mean, she was fighting an injured shoulder in 180 and a miscut. And when you look back at what she has meant to the game, you have to look no further than the past champions in this U.S. Women's Open. I mean, Ingi Chan, Inbae Park, Nayeon Choi, Soyeon Ryu, and Yoon-ki-ji. Six of the last eight before 2016 and seven of the last 11. Look at the leaderboard this year. You see Ji, Sung-hyun Park, Amy Yang, Jaren Lee. And you can even consider maybe Lydia Ko, even though she's a New Zealander. Some consider her one of the Soul Sisters because she was born in South Korea. But, you know, then look at the world rankings. Five of the top 10, nine of the top 20, 11 of the top 25 are South Korean women. And unlike any other sport in history, all that success can be traced to one player, Sayri Park, the lodestar, the revolutionary, the woman who, depending on who you ask, she either single-handedly kept the LPGA afloat during a time where the tour's existence was in peril, or she's the person who sparked a change that drove interest and events away. Kieran, no matter how you look at it, she was a transcendental and immortal figure in this sport.
Well, she certainly was, Carlos, and I must say one disappointment from last weekend at the U.S. Women's Open for me was in addition to the Rose debacle and the situation that arrived at the conclusion of the championship was also the fact that Sayri Pack, as you say, in her last round, you know, really from what she meant to the game and how she changed the ladies' game and obviously bringing in so many incredible players from South Korea, you know, obviously her legacy is something that perhaps no other female player in recent times can come anywhere near matching. And for me, it was disappointing the fact that the USGA had put her in a pairing in a group on Thursday and Friday. And in the end, for her last walk up the last hole, if she was to miss the cut, then it was actually out with the broadcast window on Fox Sports, I believe. And actually, it could only be watched live, I think, on Facebook. A good put a live link of it up. But for me, you know, for a player of that stature, who meant so much to the game, it would have been so much more fitting if she had actually, you know, it was part of the main broadcast. Because I think, you know, she deserved that opportunity. She deserved that stage. And that's another thing that's unfortunate about it. So I'm not sure what you feel about that, Carlos, but I think it's a shame that she wasn't bearing out on the big stage.
Oh, no, definitely. I think they should have, you know, at least recognized her, give her props and all that. She's just more than that to the sport. And, well, hopefully she might get something down the line. But anyway, that would conclude our U.S. Open, Women's Open review, unless you want to say something else. But I believe there was a tournament in beautiful Castle Stewart, which is in your beautiful country, and you have all the information about it.
Well, I certainly do, Carlos. The Scottish Open, I was there last week covering that event up at Castle Stewart just outside Inverness, which is about 2.5 hours from where I am right now. And obviously, it's the most wonderful location, a tremendous golf course, one of the kind of great golf courses that really appeared in this century, I think, is a modern masterpiece. It's fantastic, highly playable, but also extremely challenging in certain conditions, and really entertaining to play, really fun to play. I've played it before, it's a great golf course. and the players really do enjoy it. Phil Mickelson, who of course won the Scottish Open there 3 years ago before winning the Open at Muirfield, he refers to it as being one of his favourite golf courses in the world. It's a stunning location as well. But the Scottish Open has almost been become the kind of dress rehearsal for the Open Championship in recent years, since it moved from Loch Lomond to being played every year on a links course, whether it be Castle Stewart or Royal Aberdeen or Dublin like it was last year. Next year we're going to Dundonald Links down in Ayrshire near where Royal Troon is for this year's Open. So the Scottish Open itself is obviously sort of a marquee event on the European Tour calendar, and it was won by Sweden's Alex Norén, who secured his fifth victory on the European Tour, a guy who's been a really consistent player for a number of years now, someone who maybe I think in 2010 he was actually on Colin Montgomery's radar as a potential Ryder Cup player, and someone who may have potentially thought about being on that team in 2012, but injury problems took control. He had a wrist problem a couple of years ago, which took him out of the game, but he's come back from that really well. He won last year, and he won, obviously, the Scottish Open this weekend. So, and he played great on the final day. It wasn't his best day, but he held it together, showed a lot of experience. There's a surprising leaderboard there. A lot of guys who hadn't really been in contention very often recently were up there, but Norén held his nerve and produced a one-shot victory in the end, but you know, he grounded away around the Sunday, played a very solid, secure round of golf, done his work in the second and third day with 66 and 68. His 70 in the final day was enough to secure a one-shot victory on 14 under par from England's Tyrrell Hatton, 24-year-old who is still looking for his first victory, a guy who has been known recently for having a real fiery temper on the golf course. He's very emotional on the course. He doesn't hide his emotions. He gets down on himself quite quickly. But he's tempered that recently. He's much more calm, much more focused. And he's certainly producing the results now to back that up. And he's a fine player, Tyrrell Hatton. He actually was very unlucky on Sunday. Even though he shot 69, he only finished one shot off the pace set by Norén in the final pairing. He played better than that. He played really well on Sunday. Didn't quite get the results that he deserved. Missed a few putts here or there, a couple of bad breaks, but he's someone who is knocking on the door and almost certainly will get his win. I think I would bet by the end of this year he'll get his first win on the tour because he's a real strong competitor. And also up there we had a tie for third, Nicholas Kosak, former Ryder Cup player. He hasn't done too much recently, but had a great weekend, 66-66, had a tremendous back nine on Sunday with a back nine of 30 there. He catapulted himself right up the leaderboard into a tie for third, which secured a place in the Open Championship this week, as did Tyrrell Hatton as part of the qualifying series at the Scottish Open. Also finishing the tie for third was Danny Lee, who of course would have been defending champion at the Greenbrier Classic had not been cancelled due to the awful tragedy in that area in recent weeks. But he came over to Scotland, produced a very fine performance and finishing the tie for third there, as did Matteo Manassero, the young Italian, only 23 years old. He's been around forever now, it seems like. He was a little amateur, of course, at the Open Championship back in 2009 when he was just 16. He won the BMW PGA Championship at Wentworth 3 years ago and was often touted as being really the next big European player. Someone who's going to come up and would be a regular part of Ryder Cup teams, be a potential major contender. But really, since that win at Wentworth, his game has declined dramatically and suddenly. And he fell down to 589th in the world, and which is an astonishing slump. No top tens in over 2 years, and he had a lot of demons on the course. He was struggling with his game. He tried to change the game a little bit, and it didn't work at all. And it often happens there, the mind gets in the way, and it's so hard for him to recover his form back. But he has shown signs of life recently. He qualified for the US Open in the 36-hole qualifier at Walton Heath just after this year's event at Wentworth. He made the cut at the US Open at Oakmont, and a couple of top 25 finishes last month. So he came to the Scottish Open with some decent form by his standards, and he played great the whole week, and he held it together, and he finished off strongly, and they got a tie for third with a great achievement for him. He qualified for the Open Championship as well, and it's good to see him back. He's one of the nice guys in the European Tour. He speaks five languages. He's a very intelligent young guy, and he speaks eloquently and likeable in each of them. He's a real, really nice guy, and someone who is very easy to root for. And hopefully this will be the start of a more prolonged comeback for him going forward, where he has a foundation to build upon and going forward. Maybe this week at Cluny he can make the cut there and have a good performance there and play all four rounds, and hopefully we can see him back into the big time again, because he's a great talent and a great person to go along with it. And also finishing well was Richie Ramsay. He was the top Scot that last weekend, finishing a tie for sixth, and a 67 for him, and that saw him claim the last spot into the Open Championship, so he'll be playing this week at Royal Troon, obviously a great thrill for a Scott to turn and open a trim, but a good performance from him for Richie, one of his best weeks of the season, and showing some form again, a recent father, of course, this year. And also in the top 10, you had Andy Sullivan, who's going to be a potential Ryder Cup player this year, and Russell Knox, who is obviously coming back from America, you know, had a great season on the PGA Tour. He's in the top 5 in the FedEx Cup, I believe, and he was born in Inverness, grew up there, so to go back to Scotland, he's lived in America now for 12, 13 years, to go back to Scotland is a great feel for him, seeing some old friends, and it's a very solid week. Obviously, we'd like to have potentially won the event, but didn't quite get there, but obviously, a solid week for him, a player who still has ambitions of playing at the Ryder Cup in September. Patrick Reed also finished in a tie for 10th, a solid week for him, showing some form going into the Open Championship this week. As did Graham McDowell, who had a bit of a slow, sluggish final day, had a potential around the turn of somebody who was right in the mix, but missed a few putts here or there and fell away towards the end. And Phil Mickelson obviously won the last Scottish Open at Castle Stewart 3 years ago, and he shot a final round of 66 to finish in the tie for 13th, showing some signs of life ahead of this year's Open, where he's hoping to show some decent form there, considering he missed the cut at both the Masters and the US Open, so the Open really is going to have a chance of redemption for him this year in the majors, as he now, of course, is 46 and looking to get his first win since he won the Open at Muirfield in 2013. So the Scottish Open is obviously a great event, of course, certainly one that people enjoy in the US, being broadcast on network television over there. But the big story for me was really the tour crowds that we had that week. The attendances were down significantly in previous years. The last Scottish Open at Castle Stewart in 2013 was attended by 65,000 people over the 4 days. This year, it was 41,000, a huge decrease compared to then and compared to last year at Dublin and indeed the year before at Royal Aberdeen. So that was a bit of a concern. Why that was the case, we're not sure. Whether it was to do with the weather, which also didn't help, whether it's the fact the Open Championship is also in Scotland, since people may be electing to go to that rather than the Scottish Open, and maybe also the fact that Andy Murray, who of course is Scotland's great tennis player and champion, who of course played it in the Wimbledon final on Sunday, which of course he won for a second time. Perhaps that attracted people to watch, stay at home and watch that on television rather than go and watch the golf at Castle Stewart. So there are questions for the organisers to ask why that was the case, why the European Tour looked into it as well, why attendances were so low compared to previous years. That is a concerning trend. I'll be very intrigued to see the numbers at Troon this week and see whether it's actually an outlier as to whether there's a declining enthusiasm for attending golf tournaments in Scotland or not. We'll have to wait and see. But it's a shame because Castle Stewart's a great venue, a great golf course. The organisers have put a great job into putting the event on. It's a very well dressed and very well presented event. But unfortunately, the crowds were down. However, Alex Norn produced a great performance. Carlos deserved to win that. 5 European Tours for him now. He's back to his best. And I would not be surprised if he wins again this year. But obviously, a great week. A lot of guys coming back to form. And 4 guys are qualifying for the Open this week. So it's a great kind of build-up to the Open. The great 2 weeks here in Scotland. The Scottish Open, now the Open. Part 1 is done. And part 2 is coming up. And I'm looking forward to it.
Definitely looking forward to it. And a very great win for Alex Norin. Back, great to see him back in the winner's circle. Hey, let me tell you about the Web.com Tour. It's all about catching fire just for 72 holes. Do that and your dreams can be made. But in Rick Lamb's case, however, it took 92 holes. That's why, because a 25-year-old from St. Simons Island in Georgia authored the ultimate Cinderella star story this past Sunday on the Web.com Tour's Lacombe Health Challenge, going from a Monday qualifier to a champion. He shot a course record 9-under par 63 on Peak and Peak's upper course, getting him into a 4-man playoff along with local favorite Dominic Boselli, Rain Gibson, and Cheng Song Pan. Lamb prevailed on the second best playoff hole with a birdie on the par 5 18th. I mean, he came into the event having played in just 2 Web.com Tour tournaments this season, missing the cut in both. In 2 starts on the PGA Tour Latin America, he's made just 1 cut, pocketing $5,075, and that made Lamb the type of underdog Las Vegas wouldn't even put odds on it. But he put on a slick downhill chip shot close on that second playoff hole, and he knew he would have an excellent chance to win, or at very least extend the playoff, except he didn't have to, because, you know, he won, then he watched as Pan and Gibson missed their birdie attempts, making him the first Monday qualifier to win on the Web.com Tour since Sebastian Capelan. He did it in 2014, and you might remember that, Kieran. Lamb 63 on Sunday was the second time he's carded that score during the week. He also shot a 9-under to share medalist honors during the Monday qualifier on the Peak and Peaks lower course. So he had a feel for this place. After finishing tied for 79th at the 2015 Web.com Tour qualifying tournament, his status on the priority list was low, forcing him into this Monday qualifiers, but he doesn't have to worry about that anymore. That meant that he could go ahead and cancel his flight from Cleveland to St. Louis, where he was going to drive to the next Monday qualifier. So, Kieran, that was no longer necessary. So instead, he got a ride home with his dad to his hometown in South Bend, Indiana.
Excellent stuff. And I'll take us now to the Champions Tour, going from those young guys to these older guys in Champions Tour, where Paul Goydoff secured his third Champions Tour victory at the Dick Sporting Goods Open there, and he held on for the victory there after firing a 69 to finish 14 under par from Wes Short Jr., who burned the last hole but came up just narrowly short of Goydoff in the end by two shots. Now, not exactly the most stellar field in the Champions Tour. Most of the guys now are getting ready for the Senior Open Championship coming up this week, and then, of course, the U.S. Senior Open coming up after that. So it's getting towards a busy summer of big events for the Champions Tour players. It wasn't the best field of the year you would see on the Champions Tour. So Paul Goydoff took advantage of that, and his first win for 18 months now since he won last year. So it's a great win for him. The Champions Tour, of course, is always brings out a few interesting characters, of course, and I was most intrigued to see Carlos Franco finish in a tie for eighth, a guy who is one of those players who was renowned for being a supreme natural talent, but someone who didn't necessarily enjoy working on the range. In fact, never really did. He just turned up and played. Occasionally, he played quite well, and most of the time he didn't. But when he was on, he was very good, and he played well this weekend, one of his best weeks since turning 50. So maybe it's the start of things to come. Perhaps he works harder now in his old age. You never know. That might be the case. Maybe he's a more relaxed, younger days are now behind him. So that was a great week for him as well. John Daly was in the mix going into the final day, a disappointing final round, shooting 73 to finish just outside the top 10. John Daly still hasn't quite caught fire on the Champions Tour since turning 50 early in the year, but he's looking forward now to a big summer where he's playing obviously in the Open as a former champion. Then he has the Senior Open, then he has the PGA Championship as a former champion, and then of course he has the US Senior Open. So John Daly has a very busy schedule ahead, and we'll be looking forward to hoping trying to get some more consistent results, maybe trying to break into the top 10 and perhaps get his first victory as a senior player. So the Champions Tour, it's obviously in Vijay Singh as well. Vijay Singh, who's going to play in the Open this week, he qualified recently after finishing well at Congressional in the Click and Loans. He finished a tie for 36, which is disappointing for him. Also, a player who's still competitive on the main tour, didn't have a great week, and he finished well down the field. So, yeah, and also Jean van de Velde, who he made his debut as a senior player, the player who, of course, came so close to winning the Open Championship at Carnoustie in 1999, where, of course, he had that infamous disaster in the last hole there at the fall into the playoff, which, of course, he eventually lost to Scotland's Paul Lawry, who won the Clarence Jug that year. And van de Velde, well, you know, he's now 50. He's a big part of the bid for France to host the Ryder Cup in a couple of years' time at Le Golf National. And now he's 50, he made his debut there. He'll be playing in the Senior Open at Carnoustie in 2 weeks' time. So there'll be a lot of memories for him, good and bad, next week. But a very poor start to his Champions Tour career, finishing plus 10 and a tie for 73rd. So a lot to build on him going forward. But for Paul Goydoff, a guy who, of course, shot 59 on the PGA Tour at John Deere a number of years ago, a guy who's an intriguing character. He likes to have a very dry sense of humour. He has an unfortunate habit of wearing his shirts with the top button done up like Bubba Watson, which is not a good look. But he's certainly on his day, a very fine player, and he got his third win on the Champions Tour.
And with that, we'll wrap off our weekend backspin. We're going to take our first short break, and when we come back, we're going to start right away going into the news. And you know it, I'm going to talk about the Olympics, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network, and we have a lot to talk about. It's going to be six pieces. I promise you at the time that I'm going to take here, I'm going to make up for it in the other two, so don't worry about it. You know this is big for me. I'm going to take the tee off here talking about the Olympics, specifically golf in the Olympics. You know, I've been talking about it for the past few months. And I have to tell you, I mean, this Zika excuse is a virus that has been affecting male golf players. This is an infectious virus that seems to be spreading quickly and affecting primarily male golfers. And as only one female golfer has been affected by it. I mean, outside of golf, other sports athletes have used the great medicine of common sense and Olympian pride and honor to be well protected from it. I am thankful that over 11,000 athletes from 28 other sports apparently have been immune so far, with cyclist TJ Van Garderen being the only exception to those 11,000. But I still remember like now, being very excited back in 2009 when it was announced that after more than a century on the sidelines, golf will return to the Olympics at the Summer Games in Rio de Janeiro, that's in 2016. Also, rugby was last playing until 1924, was coming back as well. I was excited about golf. I mean, you can remember that Patty Harrington and Michelle Wee, they addressed the IOC at Copenhagen in person before the vote. Wee talked about taking up golf when she was four, but never being able to dream about an Olympic medal until then. Suzanne Pedersen and Matteo Manacero, who was then a 16-year-old and the 2009 British amateur, were at hand as well to give their takes on that. But you also, after they were voted in, you saw how Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, they were excited about the prospects of how important it was for the growth of the game. And Tiger Woods, when he was the top dog in golf, he was saying that he was excited about the prospect of playing. That was 7 years ago, and you would think that would have been more than enough time for the powers of the sport to spread the supposed importance and making pertinent arrangements on the schedule to allow it for not to affect the Olympic participation. Especially when you consider that Ty Votto, who now is in the PGA Tour, is one of the top lead officials, was then the Executive Vice President of Communication and International Affairs and Vice President of the International Golf Federation, along with Peter Dawson, who was the President of the IGF and Chief Executive of the RNA, where they were at the forefront of making golf once again an Olympic sport. You would think that would happen, but no, it didn't. And there is more than 20 players, including Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth and Francesco Molinari, the last three to announce that they were out of it. But let me tell you one thing. You hear what the other athletes say, how they cannot help but beam as they stood and gazed around the other athletes who all share a common connection, a connection of sport, a dedication and passion, a connection which saw them all compete for our country at the highest level. It's so lovely to have the night to wear that Olympic blazer and be recognized alongside athletes who, when you think about it, the golfers, they're overshadowed by this person. So I understand that. They should understand that as well. There are people there that are much more important, much more recognized than that. Maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. But who have to go through so much more, so much adversity with so little support. It puts really everything into perspective. Most of today's athletes, like these golfers, are privileged in that their elite ranks are recognized and make a lot of money. But they should realize just how much sport can mean to people. To have someone to follow at the Olympics, someone local, someone you have met, or someone you don't even know who has been selected to wear the colors of your country, means a great deal. They often get so caught up in their own process that they forget how many other people were involved, even if not directly. It's not just a race for yourself or your family. It's not for your immediate circle, like specific championships have come. It's for that other person. It's 28 different sports competing in the same competition at the same time for the same reward. Everyone is given the equal spotlight. It's not a me. No gold medal is worth more than any other. The Olympics is for the entire country, for the entire world, and it really brings your country together, athletes, families, friends, and supporters, and fans alike, like a family. That's the bigger picture that these golfers are missing on by using that blatant excuse about the Zika virus that they're going to get there. If they should just call people there, they would know and use common sense. That's not going to be a problem. okay? Security, like I said last week, you know, nobody, I don't hear anybody talking about security in St. Louis where the PGA Championship is going to be played in 2 years. And it's worse than Rio de Janeiro, almost twice worse. And you're telling me there's security problems in Rio de Janeiro that's what they're worrying. You know, it's incredible. And today, what really, really ticked me off were the contradictory approaches that you would see from Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth when they were grilled there at the conference in Royal Toon about this. They were not talked about their prospects of playing in the championship. They were asked about why you're not playing in the Olympics. Jordan Spieth, I mean, after seeing that, he has a great future in politics because he tiptoed around it. He wouldn't even, I think that Michael Jackson in his tomb would be very proud right now about how he did the back moonflip there with it. But, you know, it was incredible. Like he said some time ago, you know, that he was such proud to be going to the Olympics, and it was the toughest decision in his life right now to do that. But he said, you know, like this, it wasn't me, it wasn't them, it's just about me, this kind of topic. But he gracefully danced around it, and, you know, he would bring a proud PR to the eye of any PR flag. But Rory, you know, you, about a month ago, you were telling everybody, and in priority, I remember you telling how excited you were about the prospect of playing the Olympics and all that. But then, you clearly came and said that this was, you were in the sport just to win, not to make the sport grow. And why you are an ambassador here in the USGA. You know, if you're not, it's just to win and not about making the sport grow, this is what it's all about. And that's what is making all these players look bad. I mean, if it's incredible. I'm frustrated because I know, I understand. It's been 112 years that you see that you have been taught that all you had was to play for the championships and for the majors and all that. It's understandable. But just like in 1988, there was a lot of problems getting the top players for tennis, which is a sport much like golf, to be here in the Olympics and to get to play. Mm-hmm. I know it's the same thing that is happening here. I just hope, Jim, that in 2020, you know, this, I don't know what excuse they will use in Japan, because they might come and say, hey, you know, I'm not going because Japan is prone to earthquakes and tsunamis and all that, and who knows, you know. But I really hope that this changes. They take the cue from the LPGA women. They do a better scheduling because the LPGA did it around their schedule. And the women are calling out even Tim Finchin, like Stacey Lewis did, at why they didn't do something about this. I'm going to leave it there. And if you have any comments about it, I'm just frustrated at this, just like a lot of people are. I understand the point from people that would say, hey, golf is not needed there. Yes, golf is needed there, and it's not like a lot of people think. Yes, golf needs the Olympics. It's not the Olympics that need golf care.
Yeah, I think it is unfortunate for me. You know, I'm healthily cynical about many things, but I think it is extremely unfortunate that the Olympic Games, really, with golf in there, hasn't really been given a chance because so many of the top players are now withdrawn. The world's top four players will not be there. I think Jordan Spieth yesterday is really kind of the final nail in the coffin for Olympic golf, which, of course, the vote will be next year to determine whether golf will actually be in the Olympic Games after 2020. So it doesn't matter who's going to play in it in 4 years' time. It probably won't even have a future beyond that, which is a shame. It may not matter to many of these players right now. And I understand, you know, their issues with certain things. I do think the Zika virus is a very handy excuse for a lot of these guys. I'd actually much rather the players who withdrew followed Adam Scott's route and just said, I'm not interested. Adam Scott said that months ago. He wasn't interested in it. He's never dreamed of being Olympic Games. His focus on the major championships, that's fine. He was up front and honest with that, and we have to expect that. But it's too many players who are using the Zika virus as an excuse that I think isn't right. You know, for example, do you really think that Vijay Singh is concerned about the Zika virus? You know, and he cited that, of course, when he withdrew from the Olympic Games. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. And many of the players as well. But why are they withdrawing from it? Well, I think, obviously, part of it is the schedule and whatever else. Are there other issues. Does golf have an issue with drugs, with sport enhancement drugs? And is the Olympic Games, as Rory McIlroy cited today, is golf not up to standard in terms of screening players and testing players like the Olympic Games would have been? Maybe some players have a guilty conscience and are concerned that certain things might be revealed about them if they were to go to Rio. Or also maybe Rory McIlroy has had his arm squeezed by Nike, who do not wish to see him wearing another brand's clothes during the Olympic Games. There are potentially many theories as to why players are pulling out of it. The Zika virus is obviously there. But in the end, I believe the odds are, according to experts, the odds are for players athletes Olympic Games this year to actually contract Zika is apparently 500,000 to 1. It's extremely remote, it's the middle of the winter in Brazil, there are no mosquitoes, they aren't there, they're gone, so it's extremely unlikely. In fact, I believe you can get better odds on seeing Elvis Presley walking down the street than you can getting the Zika virus at the Olympic Games. So for me, it's unfortunate. It may not matter to these guys right now, and that's fair enough, but for me, it's a shame, because maybe if golf was an Olympic Games, maybe in 20 years or 30 years or even longer than that, then it would start to matter. People around the world would actually start watching Olympic Games and golfing that every year, every 4 years, and they would see it and become part of their culture, like the Masters or like the Open Championship is for people like us or players before us who grew up watching those events. And you know, for me, what's likely now to happen is that future generations will be deprived the opportunity, if they're golfers, to represent their country in the Olympic Games. Now, it may not be, say, a thing that matters to many players right now, but maybe it could have become something. It could have become great. I think there will be many issues with Olympic Games with golf, and I think the format's a mistake, and there are many issues with it. People have worked hard to get the golf back into the Games. And I say, I think it's unfortunate that so many people have, players in the future will not have the opportunity, probably, as it seems to be the case. But Rory McIlroy and what he said today was obviously extremely strong comments. It was surprising to hear him be so upfront about it. And you have to respect his honesty. Maybe you can criticise what he had to say, but at least he was honest. That's all I can say.
Like you said, I mean, it's unfortunate. The excuse they're using, they might have been better off on that. And like I said, you know, and you usually pointed out, in 20 years from now, and like Lexi Thompson said, she never thought about playing in the Olympics because it was not possible. Once it was available to her, she wanted to do it. And there can be some small kids in some other countries that could now say, well, I'm not good at basketball. I'm not good at track and field. I'm not good at that. Well, there's golf as well. Let me try it. And they have a chance to achieve and grow the game more than what is being done already. And that's the unfortunate thing right now. But anyway, more than 20 players, that would be more than a third of the 60-player field that are going to be there, are out, including the top four in the world, and it's very unfortunate. But anyway, let's move on now, and you have some more news right now to talk to us about. But Martha Burg is back in the news, and it has to do something about your personal person right now in the world, Donald Trump. What's going on?
Yeah, my personal friend, Donald Trump. Yes, Martha Burg, of course, people will remember from many years ago now at Augusta National for being very so vocally against the club's male membership policy there back in the day. I think it's 14 years ago now. And she has come back into the news this week here, and she's called for next year's U.S. Women's Open to be moved from Trump National in New Jersey, where the event will be held next year. And she wrote a blog for the Huffington Post on Friday, and she criticized the USGA, mind you. Everyone's doing that, so it's not a surprise, you know. If I'm criticizing it, you're criticizing them, maybe Martha Burg may as well do it as well. But she's criticizing them in this case over this placing profit over principle. And she'd added a link to a petition to force the USGA to hold the event elsewhere. Not that I think that's going to make much difference. And she said in her blog, it seems that the USGA, no stranger to hypocrisy, refuses to move next year's U.S. Women's Open from the Trump-owned Bedminster Club, even though the USGA issued this public statement condemning Trump's racist views after his Mexican rant when he announced his candidacy for president last year. And that's somehow true. And Donald Trump, of course, is going to be the Republican presidential candidate this November. He's angered many, many people across the world with his comments and his statements during the campaign. including his promise to build a wall across the U.S.-Mexican border to deport 11 million illegal immigrants and to, of course, to temporarily ban Muslims from entering the country, which, of course, has already burned a lot of bridges with many people, including those in the golf world. Of course, we saw the PGA Grand Slam of Golf, which was due to be held at Trump National in Los Angeles. It was cancelled last year, also due to concerns there. And last month, the PGA Tour announced that the WGC Cadillac Championship in Miami would move from Trump's course in Doral to Mexico City next year, which I think is one of the funniest things I've heard all year. So Trump's been burning bridges with the game, but in this case, the U.S. Women's Open is going to be played at Bedminster next year. So Martha Burke has come out with this, and she said later on in her blog, the objection is to one of the ruling bodies of golf, noting to Trump's overly racist and sexist views, that shows where the USGA really stands, despite the lip service only condemned the condemnation a year ago. And, you know, I think that's certainly very true. The USGA, you know, Trump's been kind of an issue for golf to handle, to deal with, in that he also put a lot of money into certain golf courses. He's brought new courses to the scene, developed old golf courses as well. And he also has a big brand name as well, which, of course, was at some point, I'm assuming, very attractive to certain sponsors and to the governing bodies themselves. However, I think in the past year, Trump's brand has been irreparably damaged by his presidential campaign. And in the end, those who associate themselves with Donald Trump are now being tainted with that same brush, you know, rightly or wrongly. So the USGA, you know, I'm not sure what the contract state as to whether they could break away from that agreement to go to Bedminster next year, but it's certainly an issue for them to deal with. And obviously, who knows whether Trump will be president by this time next year, or if not, even either, whatever happens, there'll certainly be questions for the USGA to answer about that going into next year's US Women's Open. And of course, there are wider questions for the Open Championship as to whether they'll go back to Turnberry in the coming years as well, which of course is owned by Donald Trump now. So Donald Trump's been a recurring issue for the game in the past year since he started running for president. Martha Burke is someone who obviously comes out for women's issues, and she's made a very strong case here, criticising the USGA, and we can certainly understand why, because the USGA do come across as hypocrites in this particular case, where they criticise Donald Trump for saying what he's saying and distancing themselves from him, but yet holding their flagship women's event at his golf course. It doesn't quite stand up to scrutiny, I'm afraid, Carlos.
Sorry, I had the mute button here. So yeah, I'm here. Sorry, I had the mute button again here. I just was stopping myself from saying something about the Olympic thing. But no, like you mentioned, Martha Burke is back again in the news, and I believe she has a point there. But, you know, it's just like the Olympics, the strong thing is something that's not going to go away anytime soon. But hey, let me tell you about something else here. A Tiger Woods golf simulator might be coming to a Chinese town near you. Tiger Woods has teamed up with Full Swing Golf and Ali Sports in a partnership aimed to grow the gaming of golf in China. Full Swing Golf and Ali Sports, a sports platform that is as a subsidiary of Alibaba Group, deals with ticketing, broadcast rights, and rights management, announced a new partnership back in Thursday with the aim to grow the game of golf in China. According to a press release, the wide-ranging partnership includes both integrated marketing and cross-promotional programs with the simulator company. A keystone to the partnership is Full Swing's golf relationship with Tiger Woods. The company will create Tiger Woods-branded golf simulators as part of the deal. And Ali Sports CEO Shang Dazhong had this to say about the new deal, and I quote, "We are extremely excited to partner with Full Swing to take a huge step forward in the effort to grow the game of golf in China. We believe Full Swing Golf and Mesh technology and relationship with Tiger Woods will propel golf forward in China, allowing golfers greater accessibility to the game," end of quote. Woods is also quoted as saying, and I quote, "One of the reasons I wanted to work with Full Swing was their vision for the future and how they plan to change the landscape of golf. This new partnership demonstrates that and also gives me the opportunity to work with Jack Ma, who is someone I respect tremendously because of everything he has been able to accomplish in his life," end of quote. This is great news not only for China, but to the entire world of golf, especially for Tiger Woods right now as well. But the more players we can get into the game helps competition and global grand of golf. You know, China has always produced some great athletes, and it looks like this partnership will have to continue the trend. Here in golf simulators are a great way to get the youth of any country involved in sports because they can associate it with the video game type of use, especially the millennials and young kids right now. So these simulators can also be an alternative to the sometimes unsafe air quality in China.
Yeah, absolutely. Golf simulators are very popular across the world. There are many of them in the UK where people, they tend to be associated with bars. People have drinks, have parties and play some golf and simulators, so it's quite a good combination, I think. But yes, I'll move on to, from that positive news, something a little bit more negative. For Davis of the Third, the US Ryder Cup captain, who recently underwent successful left hip surgery, and he's expected to make a full and complete recovery in time to stroll the fairways at Hazeltine in September when he takes charge of the American team for a second time against Darren Clark's European side at the Ryder Cup this September. So, but and Davis Ruff, of course, won on the PGA Tour at the age of 51 last year, has been feeling increasingly uncomfortable throughout this year with his hip bothering him, as he was working hard in his game, trying to keep up with young guys in the Tour. It was causing him more and more trouble, and he had to get surgery to correct it. And of course, that's affected him. Really, he'll now miss the PGA Championship, which of course he won back in 1997, and the Wimbledon Championship, which he won last year. So that's a hard thing for him to give up, but he now has more time to sit back and relax and to study the players, his potential players, think of his strategy, think of the pairings, and watch golf on television, and he'll use that time wisely. But Davis Love, obviously an unfortunate thing for him, but he'll be obviously at the Ryder Cup this year. He will be spreading around there, I'm sure, cheering on his players, supporting them, and hopefully he'll be back on the golf course soon. He's planning on playing in the first PGA Tour event of the season later this year for the 2016-17 wraparound season. So Davis Love will be back on the course soon, but unfortunately the PGA champion of 1997 will not be at this year's event at Baltusrol.
I hope that, you know, if the U.S. wins in the Ryder Cup, he doesn't start jumping and re-injures it. So and that would be difficult to see the U.S. winning, so I think he's safe. Anyway, you know, fresh off his 15 minutes of fame at the U.S. Open, Andrew Landry is making a difference for a family facing considerable adversity. Landry, the 28-year-old Texan who led the Open after a first-round 66 and played his way into Sunday's final pairing before fading from competition, has taken an interest in the plight of Austin Halter, a 3-year-old girl from his hometown who was diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia last August. He donated $10,000 in proceeds from an endorsement deal he scored as a result of his Open success to Halter's family and set up a GoFundMe page that raised an additional $15,230 as of Thursday morning. He told Golf.com, and I quote, "I don't have kids, so I don't know what they're going through, but I just wanted to help them out in some way," end of quote. Halter recently was released from the St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, and her family learned during the 4th of July weekend that her most recent biopsy results revealed that she's cancer-free. So still, Halter's parents face staggering costs associated with Austin's treatment and recovery that Landry's efforts will help defray. You can help with the funding by visiting the https://gofundme.com/AustinStrong. So Kieran, Landry may not have won the U.S. Open, but his actions reveal a championship caliber character. And with that, we'll end up on Par 5 News presented by United Golf Network. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we have our Shift Shot with Fred from Northern Michigan. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're we're back, and now we have our segment that is called the Cheap Shot, where somebody talked to us a little bit about some specific subject, and this time Fred is not with us, but he left us a recorded segment from where he is right now, and he's golf traveling in Northern Michigan. He's like an expert on these things, and he's going to tell us a little bit about that, so let's play it.
Hi, guys. I'm coming to you from one of my favorite golf destinations this week. With summertime in full swing here in the north, it's time for one of my favorite things, playing golf in Michigan. While you guys are talking about the Open Championship to be held at Royal Troon, I'll be playing on some great golf courses. For anyone who has never been to the northern portion of Michigan, they've truly missed one of the best golfing areas in the world. There are so many wonderful areas and exciting things to see. I will only touch on a couple here tonight. First, the Gaylord Golf Mecca. It has 9 resorts with 15 great golf courses all in about a 20-mile radius. The Loon by Butch Harmon, the Natural, and Treetops Resort are just 3 of the fabulous resorts in this beautiful part of the world. The Treetops Resort is especially impressive with its Robert Trent Jones and Tom Fazio designs, as well as 2 courses from Toledo, Ohio native Rick Smith. It also has the world-famous Par 3 Treetops course. Treetops is a must-play for any golf aficionado. It features 9 of the most interesting Par 3 holes you will ever play. 2 of the holes feature elevation drops from the tee to the green of over 100 feet, and the challenging 9th hole plays straight uphill. You can read more about Gaylord Golf Mecca in the June issue of NWO Golf Links at nwo.back9mediagroup.com. That's nwo.back9mediagroup.com. Or visit their website at gaylordgolfmecca.com. The second Michigan destination, one of my favorites, is Forest Dunes in Ross Common, Michigan. It's near the center of the state along I-75. It has a wonderful Tom Weisskopf design that opened for play in 2005 and has a 19th hole to settle those on-course wagers. The new Tom Doak reversible golf course is making the world golf news. The Loop at Forest Dunes opened for play June 27th. They are limiting the number of rounds played this year, but tee times can be made at forestdunesgolf.com. With the Loop now open for play, Forest Dunes offers 54 holes of championship golf, plus the Ausable Lodge and gorgeous clubhouse dining room provide first-class accommodations for every golfer. Third on my list is Lakewood Shores, on the eastern side of the state in Oscoda, Michigan, on Lake Huron. It offers 3 great golf courses with affordable stay-and-play options for golfaholics. If your budget does not have room for a trip to the Old Sod and a Scottish golf trip, the next best thing is a visit to the Gales at Lakewood Shores. It's fashioned after the great golf courses from the home of golf, complete with a replica road hole bunker and double green. The Blackshire is Lakewood Shores' homage to the exclusive Pine Valley and is always in fantastic condition. Tall pines frame every hole, and a copious amount of waste area makes accuracy on every shot a premium. For a relaxing round in a traditional parkland style course, the Saradella is a true northern Michigan course with over 50,000 annual flowers planted around the course. With the beauty of the flowers on every hole, it's difficult to stay focused on your golf game. Lakewood Shores is one of the best golf values in the state. In addition, it sits near Lake Huron, and the beach at Oscoda makes the perfect respite from the rigors of the golf course. For their website, visit lakewoodshores.com. Mackinac Island, Boyne Highlands, Petoskey, Bay Harbor, Harbor Springs, Charlevoix, Traverse City, and of course, the beautiful surroundings of the Great Lakes offer water sports, fishing, first-class golf, and a plethora of great dining. You will not find anything better anywhere. As you can see, guys, this Buckeye has come to appreciate the great golf and beauty of Michigan, and I highly recommend it to any golfaholic.
There you have it. That was Fred there. He's in northern Michigan, traveling there and playing. And like he says, he's a Buckeye, and for him to learn to appreciate about Michigan says a lot. But hey, that's him, and great info from him. And he'll be back next week, and I'm sure he'll tell me, he'll tell us all about that great trip that he had. Kieran, let's take one more short break, and when we come back, let's bring everyone what they've been waiting for, the wall-to-wall coverage preview of the Open Championship that we're waiting. Huh? Seems like the commercial is not playing. Hopefully it doesn't come up speaking when I'm talking, so something happened. That's a thing about radio, live radio. But hey, Kieran, let's jump right into it. It's finally the week we have been all waiting for. It's the Open Championship, and it's a Royal Troon on the stunning. Well, I was talking, it was going to happen. So it's not going now on. I'm just turning it up. This is what happens. Incredible. But anyway, let's go back to it, Kieran. Finally, the week we all have been waiting for. It's the Open Championship, and it's a Royal Tour on the stunning west coast of your beautiful country, Scotland. 49 of the top 50 golfers, according to the official World Golf Rankings, are expected to tee it up in Scotland. Daniel Berger has already withdrawn due to a shoulder injury. Royal Troon Golf Club is a par 71 course that measures just under 7,200 yards. Last time the Open Championship was held at Royal Troon was in 2004. So keep that in mind when weighing course history this week. You know, since Todd Hamilton won the last Open Championship there at Royal Troon in 2004, 11 subsequent winners of the Claret Jug has been breakdown as follows: 5 Americans, 4 Europeans, 2 South Africans. So far in the majors this year, it's USA 1, Europe 1. It's Dustin Johnson in the U.S. Open, Danny Willett in the Masters. So it has some kind of a Ryder Cup feel that way. But all that suggests another European victory is very much in the cards in Scotland this week, although a flick through the record books at Royal Troon reveals that there's some serious history to overcome. They share the Ayrshire Lynx has staged 6 Open Championships since 1950, and all have been won by a visiting American. Arnold Palmer in 62, Tom Watson in 73, Tom Watson in 82, Mark Calcavecchi in 89, Justin Glenn in 97, and Hamilton in 2004. All 6 has won on the PGA Tour earlier that season. Yes, even Hamilton, so informed, competitive Americans clearly thrive on the classic links of Royal Troon. The 4 European winners of the Open Championship since 2004 were all Irishmen. Rory in 2014, Darren Clark in 2011, and Paddy Harrington in 2007 and 2008. So also bear that in mind when you think who can play well there. Paul Laurie, 1999, was the last Scotsman to triumph, and Nick Faldo in 1992, the last Englishman. Well, we have to go back to Seve in 1988 to find the last champion golfer of the year from the continental Europe. The weather here is supposed to be low to mid-60s all week, with chances of scattered showers and winds ranging from 10 to 20 miles per hour. But be sure to monitor the weather in South Ayrshire as the week goes on, especially if you plan on stacking the morning of our afternoon wave. So, Kieran, tell us a little bit about your take on the Open Championship.
Yeah, as you mentioned there, obviously there is an almost inexplicable dominance by American golfers in Royal Troon history, also going back to Palmer in 62. I don't think there's any particular reason for that. It's just a really strange coincidence. Mind you, that said, of course, Elvis Presley, famously, I mentioned earlier on, he famously dropped in Scotland for a matter of minutes or hours and nearby Prestwick Airport, just up the road from Troon, when he was in the military. So he actually stopped over there. So perhaps that history has continued, has breathed into success for American players down the years. So I'm not sure why that's the case. Obviously, you know, it'll be a funny hands again for 7 in a row this year, and it's not a very good option, but it'll be the case. I think Dustin Johnson looks a very fine bet for this week. The golf course itself is not what you would say. I don't think anyone really puts Troon down as being their favourite open venue. It doesn't really have the kind of the romantic charm or the uniqueness that maybe some of the other open venues like St. Andrews or Muirfield or Carnoustie have. They have a certain kind of character to them, maybe Troon lacks. That sets a very solid course, particularly the back nine. The front nine is very much a tale of two nines, really. Like a traditional links course, it goes out and back, where the course will play one direction in the wind, usually downwind. The front nine normally plays downwind of Troon, and it's much shorter than the back nine, so the front nine will play extremely easy compared to the back, so most scores will be made on the front nine. Then the course turns round on the back nine, usually straight into the wind, and it's a formidable test. It's a fearsome finish there, one of the hardest on the rota. And so certainly anybody who gets in that position will have to hang on towards the end to win the championship. But it has some obviously some fine holes. Probably the two most famous holes in the course would be number 8, the Postage Stamp, the 123-yard par 3, the shortest hole on the open rotation and one of the most famous, unquestionably, par 3 that can devour players. And today at the practice round, Rory McIlroy made 9 on the Postage Stamp. He went to the greenside bunker and took 6 shots to get out of it. So that just shows you how difficult that hole can be if you miss the green. It's not the biggest green in the world, but obviously only a short club in hand. And if you miss the green, you're in a precarious position. The 8th is one of the great short holes, much like number 12 at Augusta National, or number 7 at Pebble Beach, or maybe even number 11 at the old course at St. Andrews. It's a real classic par 3. Well, number 11 is called the Railway, which Arnold Palmer describes being the most dangerous hole he's ever seen, where you play a blind tee shot over gorse bushes with the literal railway line running up the right-hand side all the way out of bounds. And that's right in play the whole way, through the hole. The fairway is narrow. The hole's 480 yards right into the wind, the prevailing wind, so it's a real tough hole. We're almost likely to play the most difficult this week. So it's obviously, it's been a real classic test. But that said, the course, if the Open was held a month ago or so, the course would be running fast and firm. We had a very dry May and June in Scotland, and the course would be very brown back then. But in the past 3 or 4 weeks, it's been very wet here. So the course has become very lush and green, and it's much softer than it would normally be. So that should indicate low scoring. It will certainly favour players who don't necessarily enjoy having to run the ball into greens and play a bit more of an imaginative game. Players who like to play target golf will find Troon a little bit more receptive to them this year than normally. So I think the scoring will be very good. I think the list of winners is quite expansive. A lot of guys will fancy their chances this week. And it should be a fascinating championship as always. You know, the Open is obviously a real highlight of the summer. It has a tremendous unique feel to it. Obviously, the history is there, going back to 1860. Actually, just up the road, only a few miles up the road where Prestwick is, that was where old Tom Morris hit the first tee shot in the Open Championship 155 years ago. But then, of course, you have you have also the fact that the Links Golf Course itself, you don't see Links Golf very often on any of the professional tours nowadays, so it's a different form of the game. It involves more imagination, more shot-making, throwing the elements, the conditions. It changes all the time. It brings a kind of intangible to the as to who can compete and how it can affect the championship. Everything about the Open is obviously unique. It's different to all the other majors, obviously. Not just being out with America, but the way it plays is different. The atmosphere is different. The look is different. It just has a certain unique feel to it. And nowadays, with the way the game is, most of the tournaments nowadays on the PGA Tour and even increasingly on the European Tour, most weeks on tour look the same. The golf courses are now becoming very similar the way they're set up, and the events are almost feeling like the same. And but the Open is a break from the norm, and that's a refreshing break from the norm. That's something I think everybody enjoys. I think the Open is, you know, you can go back to Arnold Palmer back in the 60s event. At that point, was actually in decline. He came over, rejuvenated the championship, and ever since then, I think it's grown over time. I think nowadays, in America in particular, the Open is now held in higher esteem than ever before. People are now enjoying the Open. They're now understanding the golf, the different style of play, and they're enjoying watching players challenged in a different way. It's fascinating to watch. It's fascinating for the players to play in it. And you know, the Clark jugs are very small and you know, very discreet and very kind of traditional trophy, but it's one that means an awful lot. And you know, the Open for me, being obviously in Britain, it's the highlight of the golfing calendar. And for me, obviously, you know, it's almost like the world's Open Championship. You know, you have the U.S. Open, but for me, the Open's always been the international Open, where it was open to everybody across the world. We have a great history of players from Australia and South Africa winning there, and also South America and Roberto Di Vincenzo back in the 60s. So there's a real international feel to the Open Championship. The world of golf is coming together every year in the UK, and it makes for a very special week of golf.
Very special week of golf, and definitely I look forward to it. I mean, we remember in 2004 at the Hamilton, the world of golf, with that playoff win over Ernie Els, and there are no short of storylines to ponder this year. Will another unlikely winner emerge? Or can Dustin Johnson, fresh off his U.S. Open and WGC Bridgestone wins, keep the momentum going and grab another major? Or is this a major that Jason Day, Rory McIlroy, or Jordan Spieth put together four solid rounds and add to their resume? Might a veteran golfer running out of chances to grab an elusive major title or breakthrough? Of course, I'm talking about Sergio Garcia and Lee Westwood. Or will the course and weather condition dominate the headlines? There are a lot of players that we can talk about. And, you know, I know that it's I'm not even going to say there that the notable finishes from the 2004 and Open Championship, I mean, Todd Hamilton, unlikely. Ernie Els, he was in that playoff finishing second, but he hasn't been playing that well. You can maybe make a case for Phil Mickelson and Lee Westwood, who finished third and fourth among the last that could maybe have an impact by the knowledge and the great performance backing 12 years ago. And those may be the two that you can look forward to. But I will also talk about some players now that you should be looking for. And I'm going to start by saying Brendan Grace. You know, he's challenging for the Scottish. He was challenging for the Scottish Open. So he's in great shape. He has won once on the European and PGA Tours this season and was fifth at the U.S. Open this season. So he's playing very well. Luis Oosthuizen, you know, he's a tremendously solid performer, former Open champion back in 2010. And he has this imperious ball striking that should suit this course. He's a class act, you know, he is. I've been high on this guy for a long time now. He doesn't have a lot of time playing, but I'm excited about it. Matthew Fitzpatrick and his chances. He hits more fairways than most of the tee, and he has won twice on the European Tour already, won a month ago. And, you know, he has already shown that he can deal with the pressure of the majors. You can also watch for Mark Leishman. You know, he's an excellent performer in major championships. He cannot be ignored. He has lots of in the playoff of last season at St. Andrews, and I feel he can have another solid week. Another player, dark horse, maybe there, Francesco Molinari. He has been playing superbly on both sides of the Atlantic, and he has links form with a runner-up in the Scottish Open and a top 10 in the Open in 2013. Also finished runner-up in France just a couple of weeks ago. So he's playing too well to be ignored. Of course, if you call Adam Scott, he's been in the top 20 in the last each of the last 3 years at the Open, the last four Opens. I mean, he has finished T10, T5, T3 in second. So this is a guy that you have to look forward to seeing there. Of course, well, you have to talk about Rory McIlroy. Is he in form? Well, he's finally, like I mentioned before, Jason, Rory, and Justin, they haven't been able to put four rounds together, but they're the top players in the world along with Dustin Johnson. But I will be pulling for these following guys, these four guys. Lee Westwood and Sergio Garcia, definitely. I wish that they finally get that monkey off their back, just like Dustin Johnson did. I mean, and looking that they had a very good chance at the U.S. Open, I would love no more than to see them win. Henrik Stenson, I mean, no male Swedish golfer ever has won a major, but he has been given a good go in this event. He was runner-up in Murfield in 2013 and also took T3 in Royal Murfield 2008 and again in St. Andrews in 2010. He didn't play a tour in 2004, but, you know, he has topped the driving accuracy stats in his last three starts in Europe, and that helped him win the BMW International Open in Germany last month. Look out for him. And Justin Rose, you know, he revealed to Sky Sports that he'd been playing a series of practice rounds on Royal Tour last week and had experienced a couple of different wins, so that prep should help his cause. Injuries have hampered him recently, and he certainly looked short of sharpness when missing the cut in the U.S. Open. But, hey, he's coming to his own right now, and you have to look forward to it. So those are the four that I look forward most to.
Yeah, I think, obviously, there's so many contenders for the Open this year. And you have to look at the top four players, as you mentioned there. And I think they all come in here, particularly the top three. Obviously, Dustin Johnson's coming in here with tremendous form, tremendous confidence, that great win at US Open, falling off at Bridgestone. And he has the game to really decimate and take control of any golf course. And particularly the front nine there, given it plays predominantly downwind, there are some holes he could almost take them on with driver. He can reduce stones to make a pitch and putt course. So Dustin Johnson has the potential to really dominate any course, and Trun is no exception. Whether his run of form runs out or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I think Dustin Johnson has a really good chance this week. But the other three of the top four all come in here with, an added level of determination for different reasons. You know, Jason Day, who came so close to winning the Open last year at St Andrews, that was really what drove him on to the success that's come since he won the Canadian Open the week after. And, of course, the PGA, the FedEx Cup events, and obviously the form he's showing this year as well. Jordan Spieth also came so close to winning the third leg of the Grand Slam last year at St Andrews, had that poor finish in the last hole when he came up short with a wedge on the 18th at St Andrews. And so he comes in with a bit of determination from that. And Rory McIlroy, of course, won the Open 2 years ago at Royal Liverpool, didn't actually get to defend his title last year at St Andrews because of his ankle injury that he incurred. So, Rory's almost coming back in here in his own mind as being the defending champion because he never actually defended it last year. So they all come with a variety of different reasons to want to win this. But Rory himself hasn't really contended in the major since he won the PGA Championship 2 years ago at Valhalla. So, Rory, as much as he's shown some good form at times this year, winning the Irish Open and so on, he hasn't really done it in a major championship for a couple of years. And if he wants to get back into the conversation with these other guys who are taking his mantle, if you like, as dominant players, the likes of Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, and Dustin Johnson, then Rory's got to get back in the game and win one of these majors. And I think he has a determination. We heard him today also speak, talking about a variety of different subjects. He sounded quite feisty, quite fiery, quite determined. And a softer golf course, as the weather has made it be, very green, very lush, softer conditions, is actually very reminiscent of what he won on 2 years ago at Hoylake. So those conditions stay up, and the wind isn't too high, the course sets up very well for Rory, and he has a very good chance of potentially winning it. And I'm with you, Carl, today. I think Brandon Graves is a very good bet to win this. Has great links form, of course, winning the Dunhill Links a few years ago, competing last year at a links-style course in Chambers Bay, a guy with a lot of confidence, he's getting better all the time. I think he could certainly follow in the footsteps of all the likes of his great hero, Ernie Els, and winning the Open Championship. Justin Rose obviously has a lot of, hasn't shown much form recently, but obviously the guy here has kind of the perfect game for a major championship venue, has a really consistent game, very patient, obviously a lot of experience now being a major champion himself. He's been at the golf course early, as you say. He has a lot of experience with it now. He's played there the last couple of weeks. Knows all the different wind directions. Knows how the course plays under different conditions. That will certainly help him this week. So there are a number of guys who have a very good chance of going into it. I think there's probably 50 players you can really identify as being potential champions. But if I'm going to pick one guy, and Carlos, you've mentioned him as being your kind of sentimental pick, and I know this is usually, I'm sorry to do this, I'm actually stealing your position. You're usually his number one fan. You're usually his number one cheerleader. But I'm going to say, and I'm going to stick my neck out here, and Fred come on next week and criticize me all he wants and laugh at me when it doesn't happen. But I'm going to stick my neck out here and say that on Sunday evening, at Royal Troon, Classic Open Championship venue in Ayrshire in Scotland, the man who will be lifting the claret jug and having his name engraved on it will be a certain Mr. Sergio Garcia. This is the week, Carlos. This is going to happen.
You should have told me. I could have put a music effect or something with this. You surprised me with it. No, I really agree with you. I he's been close and he's been playing well. And he was close there at the U.S. Open and also Lee Westwood. That's why I said this too. If any of them come through, I'm pulling for them hard. I wish that one of them finally get that over the hump like this. They said neither of them need to win a major really to be add to their legacy. This is just a thing that we in the media put. But really, I would love for either one of them to do it. Of course, if it's Sergio, incredibly more happy for that to happen. But I agree with you. I think he has a great chance. I have this feeling that he's going to play very well. And also Lee, he played very well there at Regal Swim, finishing third, fourth last time. And if you want to know about some selected groupings of tee shots, know that Colin Montgomery will be taking his the first tee shot there at 6:35 a.m. along with Mark Leishman and Luke Donald. They'll be open in the Open Championship 6:35 a.m. But if here in the States, and if you're in the East Coast, that means it's 1:35 a.m. So you better don't go to sleep if you want to see that. 9:03 a.m. is going to be Jordan Spieth, Justin Rose, and Shane Lowry. That's 5 hours difference from Scotland to the East Coast in the U.S., so that would mean 5 hours less, it would be 4:03 a.m. Also at 9:25 a.m., Danny Willett, Ricky Fowler, and Jason Day. What a group there at 9:25 a.m. locally there. That's 4:25 Eastern time. At 9:36 a.m., 4:36 a.m. Eastern time, it was going to be another great group. Rory McIlroy, Hideki Matsuyama, and Bubba Watson. Those are the top four groups with the top players in the world. So, yeah, better look for that. And I'm trying to find here, Dustin Johnson plays at 2:04 p.m., so that's 4 or 5 hours less. It would be 9:04 a.m. In the States. He's along with Martin Keimer and Russell Knox. So, Kieran, if you have anything else to add before we go to our final thoughts.
Well, I must quickly say that you mentioned Colin Montgomery there, who of course will be hitting the first tee shot at Royal Troon, where he's a member and has a great family history. He grew up, spent the first 10 years of his life just living across from the golf course. So obviously a kind of emotional week for Monty. He's back in the Open after 6 years. And, you know, I guarantee that deep down, he's playing down his chances, but, you know, Monty's a funny old character. He's now, of course, a three-time senior major champion. He knows his golf course better than anybody else in the field. And I guarantee you, he's standing on that first tee at 6:35 on Thursday. He's thinking that he's got a chance to win. Now, wouldn't that be a story?
No, it's a great story. He had to qualify. We mentioned that. We mentioned it last week that he qualified on the last time, the last spot there. And his appearance is dedicated, he mentioned it, to his father, who was a secretary there on the course. At Royal Troon. So it would be interesting to see. And like you mentioned, I am sure that he's there because he knows if he has a chance, that's a place where he can play and play very well. Well, let's move on now to our final section, which is the final pots. And Kieran, you get the first shot at them. What do you have for us?
Yes, well, I mentioned earlier that at Prestwick Golf Club, which is really the home of the Open Championship, held just it's a few miles from Troon, just up the road, and obviously a real classic course that people still go back to now. It's almost like a pilgrimage. It's a fascinating place, a quirky old course that's tremendous fun to play. But the first tee shot there was hit by old Tom Morris, the legendary figure from St. Andrews, who's kind of the father of golf, if you like, of the modern game. And but that tee shot's going to be immortalized into a painting. So that's going to be extremely interesting how that plays out. And again, obviously, there's no photographic evidence of Tom Morris hitting the shot, so we'll have to wait and see, you know, how that plays out, how it's going to look. But it's going to be interesting to see how it looks, and we'll see where it goes, whether it's going to be held, contained, maybe, they'll probably taken up in the World Golf Museum or Prestwick Clubhouse for the Royal and Ancient. I'm sure the Hall of Fame will be interested in it as well, so there's obviously, you know, it's a great kind of historical thing for the game, and that should be. Be fascinating because old Tom Morris is obviously a great figure for golf and someone who, in the Open Championship, the great history of it goes back to the 1860s, and to have that, to obviously to immortalize that in some way would be quite a special thing for people involved in it and people who enjoy the history of the game. And also a place to celebrate the history of the game is the World Golf Hall of Fame, and the induction ceremony was actually originally going to be scheduled to be 3 days before the first round of the Players' Championship next year. And it will be held instead in New York in September next year, 2 days before the opening of the President's Cup at Liberty National. And of course, last year's World Golf Hall of Fame ceremony was held in St. Andrews. So it seems that they're more of a focus there. Rather than holding it at the facility itself in St. Augustine in Florida, they're going to tour it around the world, the country, and obviously an event. There's people involved in it certainly enjoy being there. I think the Hall of Fame is itself is a somewhat overrated thing. It's more of an American idea. We don't have Hall of Fames around the world. People in America seem to like to immortalize their sporting heroes into halls, whether it be Hall of Fames in baseball or anywhere else. But the golf one's obviously, it needs lots of people in it. But next year's ceremony will be next September. I have no idea who's going to be in it. That'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Hopefully, I have my fingers crossed for Ian Woosnam, who has been long omitted from the Hall of Fame, someone who, of course, was former world number one for 50 weeks of the year, former Masters champion, really part of that great European revolution back in the 80s and 90s. He's really the one person of that group who is now not in the Hall of Fame. So it means a lot to him. It would give him an exemption in the Champions Tour as well. So I hope for Ian Woosnam he gets into the Hall of Fame next year, because it would certainly be well-deserved.
Most definitely looking forward to it. And hey, I'm going to have some sad news to report. Mr. Charlie Clayton Matlock, he died on July 9th, 2016, after a long illness. He was 86 years old, born in Athens, Tennessee. He was a longtime faculty member at Florida Southern College in Lakeland, where he was involved in athletics and coached many winning golf teams. He enjoyed all aspects of life. He was an avid father, lover, traveler, and loved to laugh. And the other one was Griffin Clark, a 21-year-old graduate of Thomas Dale and a standout golfer at the high school and college levels, died early Monday in a single vehicle crash in Chesterfield County. Police confirmed that Mr. Clark's vehicle ran up the road, struck a brick retaining wall, and overturned. He wasn't wearing a seatbelt, and alcohol appears to have been a factor, unfortunately. So this accident occurred not far from his parents' home on Wadhold Clear Creek. He was a rising star in the area golf. He was named three times to the All-Metro First Team. His three-stroke triumph in an 18-hole individual showdown enabled St. Louis University to defeat Chico State 3-2 in the team final of the NCAA Division II National Championship Tournament. He was a redshirt sophomore, so our condolences goes to both families. And finally, on a positive note, a new web.com tour event has been scheduled for next year in Omaha, Nebraska. The PGA and Pinnacle Bank announced Monday that the Pinnacle Bank Championship will be played the week of July 17th to the 23rd next year at the club in Indian Creek. The purse will be $600,000. The parties have said their five-year sponsorship agreement runs to the 2021 season. The PGA Tour didn't renew its contract with the Omaha Community Service Foundation after the 2013 Tux Classic, ending an 18-year tour run in Omaha, but now it's back. So with that, we conclude our final pause. And Kieran, if you have something else to add before we close our show, this is the time.
Well, just to say, it's been a pleasure to be on the show with you as always, Carlos. It's always fun to come on and talk about some golf. Even though it's late at night here in Scotland, but it's always fun to stay up and the opportunity, and also the Open Championship is obviously one of the highlights of the year for all golf fans, particularly those in the UK. It's a great showpiece for the game. It's the UK's oldest championship, has a great history, a great tradition, and obviously, as I said, a very unique feel to it with links golf and the conditions and even the atmosphere and the crowds, something you don't get to see very often elsewhere. So it's a very unique and special week, and always intriguing, and obviously, so many great storylines going into it, so many great players who have kind of agendas to settle with the Open and indeed themselves, and it should be compelling going into it, and hopefully we'll have a great championship, which isn't, hopefully the weather isn't too bad. Hopefully it's just there to keep it interesting, a little bit of wind here, a little bit of rain, keeping it tested, but nothing too serious. I don't think it will be, so it should be fairly decent conditions for the most of the week. Scoring should be good, should be exciting to watch, with a lot of birdies and eagles, I think, in the course, and maybe a few disasters as well in certain places, so it should be very interesting, very exciting. And a lot of players have a chance to win. But as you both know, Carlos, Sergio Garcia is going to win. And a victory that I think will be very emotional for you. So I hope you enjoy that moment, Carlos. Next week, with Fred, when Sergio wins the Open, you can gloat and you can boast about it to Fred on the show next week. And you can celebrate and enjoy it. Don't party too much now, Carlos, because you have to keep a clean head for the show. But Sergio will win the Open, and you're going to enjoy it, I'm sure.
And I don't know if I'll be able to talk if that happens, but we'll see what happens.
Well, back Niners, very emotional, I think, yes.
It will be. Well, Back Niners, sorry. That wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Kieran, thanks. Special thanks to you always. so knowledgeable.
Thank you very much.
So great takes that you have. It's a privilege to have you here, especially on Open Championship Week. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. And if you haven't done so, follow the show. Our Twitter ID is at Pac9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, and along with Kieran Clark, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.